Y'all, I can't think of the last time I was in the room with both of you. I'm so happy to see you both.
Thank you. We're so excited to be here. It's always nice to see you, Katie.
And for you to be back home in Atlanta, too, I'll bet, huh?
Oh, absolutely. This will always be home.
Yes.
Danielle and Eric Beverly, and I've got to tell you that I've known you guys. I'm trying to think of when the first year was that we did the Pink Ribbons. Do you remember how long ago?
We were talking about this the other day, and I feel like it was fourth anniversary for the foundation, which we're on 12. So it's been about 8 years.
12 years. Wow. Yeah.
12 years.
So we were, well, my hair was very short. Danielle and I are both breast cancer survivors and very thankfully here and here together. But our stories are very different. And we happened to meet because we were modeling in this Pink Ribbons event, which was a luncheon and tons of people were there. It was a very exciting thing. But at the time, you and I were freshly out of having surgeries and going through chemo and radiation and the whole work. So what I want to talk to you about now is, how are you doing?
Doing well. I mean, thankful. It's been 11 years. My daughter's now 11. Yes. So exciting to think 11 years ago was my last battle and had three of them within a 6-year span. So
isn't that incredible? Three times she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And the third time you were pregnant.
Yes, the third time I was 36 weeks pregnant for Leah, which I guess I can't even fathom when I think back on that. But I'm doing great. She's healthy. And God willing, I'll stay cancer-free for the rest of the life.
You will. Your hair looks great, too. I love it long.
Oh, well, thank you. Isn't that funny? I don't know. I think I'm a short hair girl.
What do you think, Eric?
I like it both ways. She's beautiful.
You're a lucky lady.
That's a trap
she rocks
question.
It both ways. It's true. Well, I am almost 10 years. It'll be 10 years in April.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
thank you. Oh, and it is. It's like until you get to that 5-year mark, you're just kind of like, whoa, what's going to happen? And it can still come back. I know, because it's happened to other friends. But I guess we know what to expect. And all I could think when it was happening to me was, I was glad I didn't have children. Because I thought that's got to be the hardest part of this, to have a husband and to have somebody that's totally dependent on you. Tell me a little bit about that, how that.
Absolutely. I would say, so the first one I wanted to just get through with it. You know, I'm 29. I'm like, wait, breast cancer? We want to start a family. What's this mean? So we got through it. Second time, it was one of those, wait, it's back? You've got to be kidding me. And I always told myself throughout it all, if my time was up, that's what it was supposed to be. You know, and Eric, we didn't have children, first, second diagnosis, and I knew he would be okay, so to speak. But that third diagnosis and then getting it while you're sitting there almost 9 months pregnant and knowing you're about to bring this child into the world that's going to be dependent upon you. And my biggest fight was, this child is not supposed to be raised by a single parent, and he is not supposed to start out as a single father. So I would say that was the most difficult, and I think that made me fight even harder to do whatever I had to get through it. But the crazy part is, I think I had to push through so hard because I was just focused. I'm a new mom, you know, we got this baby, I got breast cancer. But 4 years later, I had a pulmonary embolism, and that was scary because at that point, Leah was 4, and it really hit me then. Oh my goodness, if this is a return of cancer once they had found the other spots, now what does this mean? Because I had had these years with her. And I think even though it wasn't a cancer diagnosis, the older I get and the older she gets and the more I get on in this thing of life, the scarier it is to think that it could come back. But I'm going to stay faithful that it's not. And I'm going to just continue enjoying being healthy and happy and having an amazing husband and a daughter who's pretty awesome herself.
Amen. Amen.
I feel like you view life completely differently. Do you not? Like, I don't care when people go, how old are you? I'm like, I am happily 58 years old.
Absolutely.
Or you know, whatever it is, it's just kind of like, wow, you know what? This isn't that. It isn't what the fear was the first time.
Yes, I'm in 100% agreement with you that the sun shines brighter, the flowers bloom bigger. You know, when you're in line at the grocery store and the register receipt is out and the person in front of you is just having a fit, I'm like thinking, wow. I'm okay. Granted, I do still get a little bit angry and I have my moments, but you just kind of, you appreciate life. And like you said, I'll be 45 in December and I will toot my horn and say, yeah, I'm 45. I beat cancer 3 times. I am happy. I am healthy. And you just appreciate things so much more.
The thing is, we're all survivors. That's what's so funny to me, but you don't realize until it's kind of been put to the test, or maybe you do. I'm just saying that most people that I know that are normal people, until you're really tested, Eric, tell me about being married to somebody that you adore, as you obviously do her, and that you've been waiting to start this family. What was it like from your end of things?
It was tough. And I'd say this all the time when we're out speaking or someone asks me this question is, you know, breast cancer affects not only the individual, but the family as well. And with us having a daughter at the third bout, I think it magnified my fear of what the future could hold for us. But throughout the first diagnosis, I think, as Danielle mentioned, we were like, let's get through this. Let's find out what is this and attacked it as this is a problem. This is a problem that we need to solve. As we got into the second diagnosis, it got a bit scarier. This is back. Why is it back? You start questioning things. And I think at that time, we really leaned on our faith a bit more because we were like, this is something we can't control. As we got into the third bout, it got really scary. And, you know, I like to also talk about the fears and also where the growth pattern has taken us throughout this whole journey, because it's been a journey.
Yes.
But also want to be real when we talk about it's a scary situation. And from the individual standpoint, from a group standpoint, in our marriage, there's a lot of things that we had to overcome. But it has made us better individuals, it's made us better as couples, and it's made me a better father as well, as I'm sure for her as a mom. And as we are approaching things in life, like moves or job changes or issues that happen, my daughter just broke her tibia, we panic. And then all of a sudden we take a deep breath and say, wait. There's a lot more things that could happen
that we've been through,
and we can get through this. So I think it's made us grow, and it's connected us with individuals like yourself and the network of individuals that have been through this themselves that we've learned from as well. I think part of what we've done in the community here in Atlanta and what we're doing our nonprofit is mainly because we didn't have any family down here when I was playing and when she was first diagnosed and we started treatment at Emory. But it's been a situation where we leaned on friends, the community, to help us get through. And as we started to look at what we're doing from a nonprofit standpoint, we said there are other individuals out there that are just like us that may be in a different situation, whether it's family situation, finances, that need help, because we needed help as well. So I think as we look at this journey, the perspective I like to draw from it of it's made me better. It will continue to help me out as I navigate life. And I want my daughter to learn from this experience as well. Obviously, I don't want her to go through this, but I want her to learn from this experience so that she can be a better person as well.
There you go. You said that very well, because you led right up to when Danielle was diagnosed and why you started this foundation. And I love the story of Eric. Now imagine this big, huge football player, which, by the way, we need to talk about the Falcons before you're out of this room. But imagine him sitting and trying to sit with Danielle when she's going through her treatments at the hospital. Who did you go to and what were you prepared to do?
Well, I was prepared to do anything, number one, to make sure that she was okay.
I'm talking about the chair you were sitting in.
Oh, yeah.
I know you'd do anything
yes,
for her.
Yes.
Well, talking about yourself,
yes,
really.
Yes, myself. At that time, you know, I was focused on her, obviously, because I'm not a selfish person. But as I was sitting there in the infusion center, the chairs are very uncomfortable. I ain't lying to you. And they were so uncomfortable to the point where when we're done with our experience, we wanted to give back. And my way of giving back was, let me think about getting better chairs, more comfy chairs for the spouses or family members that are there, for the loved ones that are caring for individuals that are going through treatment. And as we started navigating that whole process, our doctor at that time, Dr. Otis Brawley, had mentioned to us that our funds could be possibly used in another manner. And he really navigated us towards Grady Hospital and the cancer center there and the population that Grady serves. There is a indigent population. There is a uninsured or underinsured population that is going through a lot of the things that we went through with breast cancer that needed our help from a psychosocial standpoint, just ways for them to get through the treatment. A lot of individuals were struggling with finances, struggling with family issues, struggling with transportation, or not having the ability to do just general life needs. And what we needed to do was really provide a resource for those individuals so their minds could be on getting better as patients. Because one of the things that we learned, that individuals that are involved in their care, that are engaged with their doctors and engaged with the treatment process, they have a better outcome. Individuals that aren't engaged don't have as good of an outcome.
I didn't realize that. I didn't know that. It's very interesting, although it makes sense when you really think about it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
One of the big things right now, and research shows that there is a big difference in between individuals starting and finishing treatment because of all these other obstacles, as Eric mentioned, transportation, food. You know, you're talking about the working poor or a lot of people who are unemployed. So if you do have a job, you might be only making minimum wage. You don't have the vacation time. You don't have a savings built up. So our big thing is trying to bridge that gap so that people can start and effectively finish treatment versus feeling defeated before they even start because they don't know how they're going to get to treatment. And that's been one of the greatest things, being able to know that we're able to help a population that may not get the service or the treatment that they want or that they need, not so much that they want. And then also knowing that 12 years into it, we were very grassroots. And this was, as he had mentioned, you know, he was concerned about being uncomfortable while I'm going through treatment. So as we were trying to figure out what we were going to do, you know, and it would have been easy in the end, at the end, when you look at it, to sign a check and make a donation.
Yes.
But I'm so thankful that Dr. Brawley suggested that we go over to Grady, and not realizing that Grady, Emory, and Morehouse, you know, they do a lot of work together.
They're
a lot
connected.
Of doctors. Yes. So once we went and visited the infusion center, I mean, the size of it, the population that was there, a lot of them were there by themselves. Individuals were asking about getting tokens to get on MARTA, weren't sure if they were going to come for their next treatment. A lot of people were basically on their deathbed, and it was sad. It broke our heart. And then that's when it kind of, we started talking about, what do these people need? You know, they're already dealing with so many other issues, and then you compound it with a cancer diagnosis. So it's grown. We're so thankful. And 12 years later, I mean, we want to expand eventually, because there's individuals outside of Grady that have need. It's not just the individuals at the hospital at Grady, but we have to perfect what we do, do it well, and then obviously you need the funds to be able to expand.
Yes, you have to start somewhere. And that the thing to me that is so special about you guys is, it's interesting when we were doing the Christmas parties to watch the families meet you, and they adore you both. It was just so striking to sit back and watch you give them checks or talk to them, whatever you were doing with interacting with these people. It just amazes me just to watch you, the love that there is.
Well, I will say a lot of them almost became like friends and extended family, because they would follow up with emails or thank you notes. And unfortunately, we had some repeat individuals because they were still in treatment a year later. And we've also lost individuals that had been in our program. So, you know, you have these relationships and you form these bonds, and then cancer is ugly, you know, sometimes. But then there, we've celebrated some of the successes, and, you know, these people, just so many of them just want to feel like somebody cares, and to be able to be that person and just be there for them and just remind them that they're loved and that they got this and they can get through this and there's brighter days ahead.
Yeah. And I think to talking more about the experience a bit in going through some of our events, like Hope for the Holidays and the event where we give our grants, it really humbled you to the point where you're like, these people go through the same problems, and vice versa. It was a situation where we were able to really connect with people and then really connect with us. And I know people get excited sometimes when they meet certain celebrities or do things. And it was like, let's just downplay this. And it's about the patients. And I think that gave us really a warm heart as we really connected with different, you know, members of the community. And like Daniel mentioned, it really affected everybody. We had men in our groups that had breast cancer. And I think when you think about breast cancer, you don't think about men being affected.
That's right.
And it was eye-opening to myself as well, because you know it, but you don't see that as much. So, you know, unfortunately, we had individuals that have passed that we've helped, but we've had a lot of success, and we want to make sure that we can connect and serve more people in Metro Atlanta.
Yeah. That's the thing. It is an extraordinary thing to be touching people aside from, you know, I think, breast cancer charities, and there's the research, there's also the, they're all different kinds of charities. But then when you don't think sometimes about people that you and I could focus, I had great insurance. I just didn't even think about people having to pay bills or not having the ability to pay their bills while you're trying to focus on, you don't know if you're going to die or not.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's where there's a big, I guess I'd say, disconnect. I think it's great. And we definitely have to have research. And I'm not saying research isn't a good thing.
Right. No.
But I think in what you see with the population that we serve, you have a diagnosis and then you have a lot of people that are doing a lot of things for a cure. But there's this huge population that they're not going to make it to the cure and they're barely making it day to day. And that's where we try to let people know what makes us different and why we appreciate your support and why you would hope, we would hope that you would choose to support our foundation, because we're trying to help these individuals just make it to the next day in the midst of a cancer diagnosis, because they're not going to make it to the cure. And again, I think we need a cure, and I think it's great that money's put there, but it would be great to see more people do something for these individuals that need help on a day-to-day basis. Dealing with a cancer diagnosis.
You know where the money's going. It's staying in state. But not just that. It's really, this is money well spent. And I have to say that there are a handful of charities that I have my name associated with. And I'm very proud to be on the board of the Eric R. Beverly Family Foundation. Honestly, though, but I'm very proud because I feel like the two of you, what you stand for, the work you've done, the openness, the transparency, knowing that the money is well spent and it's not spent on a lot of glossy magazine, you know, it's just that stuff doesn't matter to me. I want to make sure people or animals or whoever it is are getting what they need.
And that's what our big thing from the very beginning, it was never about us, and it was never about us getting salaries per se or trying to employ family or friends. Sometimes you'll see that with some nonprofits. But at the end of the day, we wanted the money that's coming in to go right back out to the community. Everything that's raised here in Atlanta is staying here in Atlanta, supporting our the individuals that we work with. And what we are also very transparent about is come out. When we have these events where the individuals that we serve are there, volunteer, come, you're welcome. You know, we want you to see what we're doing and why we're doing it and who we're helping. We'll never turn away a volunteer, you know, in terms of,
that's right.
We want you to know what you're supporting and helping.
That's exactly right. We need to talk about the event and why we're talking about this today. Is that something very fun is coming up, but something close to my heart too, besides football, it's gambling.
We all love it.
Gambling and football.
There you go.
Go hand in hand. Might as well be in Las Vegas.
There better be a craps table there somewhere. Yes. We have a big casino night coming up.
Yes.
It's October 27th. At the Capital City Club. Now, this is a way that you can help donate. We've got a lot of people that are sponsoring this, and we have great silent auction and live auction items that you can bid on. But this is a way that you can give money, have a great time, but knowing that your money is going to such an amazing charity, and then come out and meet us and spend time with us and our friends.
We're excited because this year we're growing. We're going to have more casino games, more tables, more people. The food is going to be magnificent.
Yes, heavy hors d'oeuvres.
Yep, heavy hors d'oeuvres, open bar. It's all included in your ticket. And it's at the Capital City Club, which is a beautiful location, 7 to 10. And we are super excited.
Tickets are $150. When you think of that per person, if you're getting heavy hors d'oeuvres, which is like you don't really have to do dinner, and you're getting an open bar, and you can bid on some great auction items.
What more could you ask for?
And you can say hi
to
Eric and Danielle. It's going to be a pretty great thing.
Oh, we're excited.
I've got to tell you, I'm a season ticket holder for the Falcons. So Eric played how many years with the Falcons?
I played 3 years with the Falcons.
And then how many years with the Lions?
7.
So Detroit is home for you guys.
My wife is really from Michigan area, and I started my career in Detroit. I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio.
Did I know that?
No.
He's a Cleveland.
Where did you go to college?
I went to Miami of Ohio, Miami University.
Okay, yes. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. And so you're not a Buckeye fan, I take it.
I support the Buckeyes because I'm Ohio born, but I support my college.
Yeah, Miami, I bet you do.
And then I really like players. I like people. So I don't really support teams.
Tell me what you're doing now. Aren't you working with...
Yeah, I'm consulting with Tulane University, where we run a program where we serve former professional athletes, mainly football players right now, but we're open to all sports and all genders, where we do comprehensive clinical work and neurological care for former guys.
That's amazing. So this is different than what you've been doing in the past. You and I haven't had a chance to talk in a while about your
career.
Yeah,
in the past, when I retired in 2007, I immediately got into college athletics. I was assistant athletic director at University of Georgia over academics, and then I stayed there for about 4.5 years, almost 5 years, and then I got the job at the University of Texas, where I became the assistant athletic director over academics for football and ran that program for about 5 years.
Wow. I think that's really special. So you really do. You are talking about the person you're doing. Yeah. See, this is a natural for you.
Yeah. I mean, I like serving. When I retired, I have a business degree. I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I did several internships when I was playing. Worked in corporate environments and really was like, I can't wear suit and tie every day, sit behind a desk and sell widgets or whatever.
I don't know a single person that sells widgets, but that's all right.
That's an archaic term.
Yes, I know.
But no, I wanted to do something where I was involved with individuals, and I didn't want to coach. I didn't want to do anything with sport. I was kind of done with that when I retired, but I really wanted to give back and really connect with individuals. So, number one, they don't make the same mistakes that I made from an athletic standpoint or just from a life skill standpoint. And also just making sure that we can better programs, resources, and opportunities for individuals that created a path through sport. And that's why I got into college athletics and stayed in academics for about 10 years plus, and then had the opportunity to go to Tulane to serve a population that I love. Former professional athletes, we work with football, we do screenings around the country, we do cardiovascular and prostate screenings. We also do research on that side. We're the medical and clinical partner for NFL Player Care Foundation. Also, we have a clinic down at Tulane University where it's dedicated to former professional athletes, where they come down and they go through 2.5, 3-day comprehensive medical evaluations.
So of athletes anywhere?
Yes. Yes, around the country, men and women, all the above. And it's just all the resources are dedicated to them.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That's really something. That, and that makes me feel good about those schools, because they're getting so dumped on right now about other things, right? Yeah. That's really, really cool. You were an athlete too, Danielle.
Yes, I was. I played college basketball, did 1 year of track when I was in college, and like to consider myself somewhat still athletic, but the older I get, the harder it is.
I think we can all relate to that athlete or not. Yeah. Yeah.
Former athlete. But yes, I do. I love sports. And actually, my undergrad was PE and my master's is sports administration. So it was kind of funny because as he was trying to navigate his future plans while he was playing and what he, you know, might want to do, I kept encouraging him. I said, you should check into college athletics. I'm like, you enjoy, you know, relationships, you enjoy being around the guys, mentoring, you know, he didn't want to coach. He was like, I'm not doing those crazy hours. And we kind of giggle now.
So I love my wife.
She's smart too. Huh?
he kind of did the, yeah, it sounds good. And then next thing you know, he was doing what I had went to college and got a degree for, but yeah, so he's had a nice post-football career, and it's, but he also put in the time while he was playing. You know, it was one of those things where in the off seasons he was doing internships, and, you know, he was also, when they needed a guy, you know, unfortunately a lot of people get excited because they'll hear, you know, an athlete from such and such team is going to be at this event. And a lot of times they would send Eric Beverly and people would say, now, who are you? But you had to make those ties, and he.
Who said that? I don't remember anybody saying that.
Your family, apparently.
But
you guys both walk through here, but everybody knows you here. It's really great. It's very cool.
We got mobbed.
Yeah.
Oh, whatever. But yeah, he put in the time to get where he's at. So I'm
you're great team together. That's
Thank
for sure.
You.
And you've assembled a lovely team. Julianne is. I'm so excited that Julianne, who is very involved in Pink Ribbons, is now part of the Eric Beverly Family Foundation.
Julianne Kaiser is our executive director, and she brings a lot of experience to the table and very well connected in Atlanta. And this expansion of Betting on a Cure is her brainchild, and she's phenomenal.
She knows how to throw a party. She knows how to do these parties.
Yes.
Because I'm like, okay, I'll be there.
Yes.
But just make sure I have a good time, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And she definitely, I mean, I think it's, I think that this is just going to go beyond what we can even imagine, honestly.
Oh, exactly. And that's why we're excited about Betting on a Cure and just raising the funds, because we want to take the foundation to the next level, and we want to expand. We want to help more people. And there's nothing worse right now, because our programs are housed down at Grady is where we work right now. But when you get the request, and we get requests from out of state, it's amazing. People will say, you know, I found you online and I saw that you support individuals going through breast cancer. This is what's going on. And it's hard to say no. And especially if they're local and they're not being treated at Grady. So we're excited. We're going to raise some funds and eventually expand, and the sky's the limit. We're looking forward to it.
Before we grow even bigger than ever, I'm so excited about Betting on a Cure. And again, it's October 27th, 7 to 10 p.m., Capital City Club. What a wonderful place to be. I'm excited about this. You do want to get your tickets in advance, right?
Yes.
Absolutely. Tickets must be purchased in advance, and they can do it on the website, which is beverlyfamilyfoundation.org.
So again, beverlyfamilyfoundation.org. And can you call the number too?
Yes, 770-614-1779. And you can purchase the tickets on the phone too if you'd prefer to do something like that.
So the cool thing about this is, again, at the event, heavy hors d'oeuvres, there's an open bar. They're going to be really exciting. Do you know any of the auction items that are going to be at this?
Oh, yes. There's a Tuscany Villa.
Yes.
We have a couple of different condo stays, one at the beach, one up in the mountain. I want to say they're each for a week. Tons of sports memorabilia. So if you like Falcons, if you like Georgia UGA, there's some Todd Gurley items. There's just a lot of great sports memorabilia. A wine tower.
The wine tower is really cool because all of the people that are on the board donate like a bottle of wine or two.
Yes.
And so then it's one big box of, although I bid on it 1 year and I got it, and it was like, it's a bear to take home. But hey.
I bet. Did it last very long?
No, it did. I still have a couple of the bottles, honestly. Okay. Yeah, it's pretty cool, but that's a really great item to bid on.
Oh, absolutely.
But I've decided that I'm going to donate a pair of my Falcons tickets.
Oh, thank you.
Thank
Katie.
You so much.
I don't know if I can go down there anymore.
Oh my goodness.
Well,
yeah,
I got season tickets last year, right? And I went to every game. My brothers flew in. I had cousins fly in because we were so excited about Mercedes-Benz, which if you haven't been there yet,
it's amazing.
It is just for that experience. They know how to throw a party too in there.
Absolutely.
The food is really inexpensive. So that's what's great. You buy a hot dog, popcorn, soda, beer, and it's like $10. It's crazy. And the Falcons games have been very close. So if you enjoy close games but not winning, Eric, tell me what's going on with the Falcons.
We will win. We got some things. We got some injuries that's hurting us. I think once we get some key individuals back, we'll be back on the roll.
Okay, I ask you something that my brother keeps telling me that I'm not sure I quite believe?
What's that?
I don't know if you can be honest about it, though. He says that we need to get a new coach. He said our coach is too nice.
I wouldn't go there yet.
Really?
I would not go there. And again, I'm not a person that believes that it's all on one person.
Yeah.
It's a team sport. It's coaching. It's players. Obviously, they're not winning right now, but it's still early in the season, so I don't want everybody to give up on the Falcons. I know this town
does that sometimes. I want them to go to the Super Bowl because it's going to be here.
Yes. We still have the chance to win and the ability to come back, but we're close. And I think if you give some time, it'll happen.
You would be a great coach. Wouldn't he be a good coach?
I think he would, but
I think he's
a great teacher. I think he would be. I had encouraged him to go into coaching, but he saw the long hours, and he's not a morning person. Like a lot of coaches are there at 4 in the morning or sleep there.
See,
so
no,
that
I'm not
would
a morning
have been
person.
To the detriment.
I'm in deep REM sleep at that time.
Well, then you're doing exactly what you want to be doing right now.
Yeah,
and I want to be helping you with this part of it. So, all right. So I will donate. And they're really good seats. A pair of Falcons tickets. We'll pick the game. And then a parking pass to go with it.
Thank you so much.
So that will be another
item. Oh, yes.
That's exciting. But there's always just such great stuff. So be thinking about Christmas gifts or, you know, Hanukkah, whatever it is. We're getting close to the end of the year. You can come and bid on these things. But the most important part is we're just breaking bread together and having a grand time and playing casino games was something that I just love to do. So I'll be rolling the dice.
And it's all going towards a good cause.
Yes.
To help people.
That's what's extraordinary is the Beverly Family Foundation. You need to find out more about them. And again, if you can't be at Casino Night October 27th, we would love for you to donate. I'd love to have you guys back.
Yes,
we'd love to
come back because we'll have more events. But I'd love to talk even more deeply about this. October being Breast Cancer Awareness Month, especially. I'm so glad you did this with me. And
I
know our hearts and thoughts are with a lot of people, especially this month.
Yes,
and congratulations on your 10 years.
Thank you. Almost. And you're 11, lady. Thanks. Love you guys. Love you guys.
We love you. And the greatest thing out of all this cancer crap is the sisterhood that you make. It's that sorority that you never want to be in, but once you get there, you meet some pretty amazing people.
Yes, it's a sorority without the mean girls.
Yes, there you go.
So there, even though I was in a good sorority.